most of insects that you find around homes are I would say beneficial in one way or the other. There are only few species, considering all the insect species, that are considered harmful, but those are very common around homes and around towns because they are attracted to the resources that we provide. But, you know, on seeing something that you don't know, you can assume that it's doing its role in the environment and contributing somehow to the maintenance of that environment. But things, you know, things that are very beneficial that come to mind, you know, are the lady beetles that feed on garden pests, you know, the lace wings that also feed on garden and landscape plant pests. And then you have all the other, you know, things like spiders that are very beneficial in a garden or landscape. So, again, it's easier to talk about the ones that are pests because they're fewer than the ones that are beneficial because there's many of them.
For perhaps somebody that's starting their own garden for the first time this summer, they see insects, they don't know which ones are harmful to their plants, ones that are beneficial. What's the best way for them to understand what they should kill, what they should leave alone?
Yes, that's a very common question, and there's no easy answer there. But becoming familiar with the insects, making observations is definitely a good place to start. For example, one observation that you can make is whether the insect is actually feeding on the plant or is just sitting there. If the insect is actually feeding on the plant, either by chewing the leaves or by sucking the sap out of the plant, then you have evidence that this plant is potentially harmful to the plant, especially if the numbers are very high. But if the insect is just sitting there, or in fact is just moving around looking for things, or what we call foraging, it may be a beneficial that is actually looking for other insects, other critters to feed on, and therefore, you know, be a beneficial. Now, another observation you can make is whether the insects are in large abundance, in colonies, if you will, or they are individuals running around that seem not to belong to colonies. Typically, the herbivores, the pests, will live in small groups or colonies, and they will feed on those plants that are affected, whereas the beneficials, you may find one here and one there, most likely, and because they are foraging, they're looking around. So making a good observation of the situation is a good place to start.
Let's say you can't catch the insect in the act. What's the best way to diagnose, kind of identifying what type of insect that might be to determine how to rid themselves of it?
That's a very good question. Luckily for us, if you're willing to make that observation, there are signs and symptoms that the pests leave behind after they have fed. For example, holes on the foliage is a pretty convincing sign that something has chewed on it. And if it's got holes, then that means that the insect or other herbivore has the mouth parts to be able to chew on those leaves. So that excludes, if you're able to determine it's a chewing insect, that exclude the sucking insects. On the other hand, if you don't see holes on the foliage and you see dead spots or other types of debris left by sucking insects, like the cat skins left behind after they molt, then you can exclude the chewing insects and focus on those that caused that particular damage. And that's a good place to start, making the observation, is this possibly a chewing insect? If not, then it should be a sucking insect, or vice versa. Is this possibly a sucking insect, which exclude the other ones? And then focus on those insects that feed on the particular plant and look for the information on what are the common pests of that particular plant species or vegetable so that you can make the match between the types of feeding that you're observing and the type of insect that is causing that feeding.
Are you familiar with types of insects that are going to generally be a nuisance to livestock? Could you speak to that a little?
Well, yes. There's unfortunately, there are several things that that are pests of livestock, including insects like flies, for example, and other arthropods like ticks. So I would say if you have to group them, those would be the major types of critters that feed on cattle. You know, you also got the fleas and other minor things, mm-hmm. but the big livestock, probably ticks and flies are the most prevalent. Within the flies, you have the blood sucking flies, you know, like the horse flies, the deer fly, that sort of thing. But you also have the types that are parasites, and luckily we don't have those here. The screwworm has been eradicated, but in other parts of the world, you know, things that are screwworms or some similar like that, flies that live within the flesh of the livestock can be a really big nuisance. And then the ticks, which are not insects but are arthropods, they are more closely related to spiders because they're arachnids. The spiders are arachnids. But those the ticks can be really harmful because they transmit many diseases to the livestock, and that can be moved around through other animals on nature, on the wild. So ticks and flies are the major groups of critters that go after livestock.
We're speaking with Dr. Carlos Bogran with Texas A&M University, associate professor and extension entomologist, specializing in nursery and ornamentals. And I know that you talk about a lot of those insects that are perhaps nuisances for livestock. I'm sure farmers are very familiar with that and kind of how to deal with that. Let's get back to maybe the local gardener. How would they go about using the right pest control, make sure it's a safe product that is getting rid of these insects but not harmful to their plants and then themselves?
The main thing that I suggest, and I'm a home gardener as well, is the first thing is to determine whether or not you really need to do something or you can just wait and see what happens. Sometimes the best decision is not to do something. So with those observations that I mentioned earlier, you know, determine if you indeed have a pest, then you can you can observe other plants on the planting and then determine whether or not the population density, the density of the pest on the number of plants that you have, is one that will cause risk of you losing either yield or quality on those plants. You know, if you determine that you have a big enough number based on just you what you see, the spread of the damage, and what you can get from the sources of information, then if you determine that something must be done to control the population density and reduce the risk of damage, then one of the first things that you can do is to clip those heavily infested areas, and we call that mechanical or manual control. You know, if you have the time, why not just, you know, clip those leaves that are heavily infested, okay? And then go ahead and do a hard, a high-pressure spray with your water hose to try to wash off the rest of the pest, and do that a couple of times if the infestations are moderate to low. You know, you kind of go on a progression like that, doing the most common sense, you know, things and progressing until you find the right solution for you. So not necessarily you have to jump and use an insecticide necessarily to manage a pest population. If we keep an eye on populations and we find them really early on, we can physically destroy them or kill them otherwise so that they don't multiply. When the populations are high and they're widespread, then using an insecticide may be necessary. But the word insecticide is not really a bad word. There's a lot of different types of insecticides, and not all insecticides have high risks. So the word insecticide itself is not a bad thing. So you can make an insecticide out of many different things, but there are what we call low risk or reduced risk type products that include oils, either derived from petroleum or from plants, botanical oils that can be used, that are often organic registered, have registration to be used in organic production, and insecticidal soaps that are products that are registered to be used. They are really soaps, but they are registered to be used against insects, and they are the safest and most widely available and least toxic options that we have as home gardeners to deal with pests. So first, again, is determining whether you need to do something or you can wait to see what happens. You know, maybe the weather is going to go against the pest. If there's a thunderstorm coming and I have lots of aphids, the rain will kill a lot of them, so why am I going to worry about it today? So making that determination whether you need to do something, and then start with the most common sense approach to reducing the density of the pests on the plants, and then considering insecticides.
Finally, I was wondering if you wanted to shine any light on some studies that are currently underway, maybe some things that you're working on, that you're instructing at A&M, that might be useful in this conversation to some of our home gardeners or just some people that are interested in kind of the insect population, especially this time of year.
Well, things that we look for that we do tests on are those things that have the potential to be integrated into what we call a strategy called integrated pest management. The objective of IPM is to prevent or minimize the damage caused by pests by means that reduce any associated risks, including risks to the environment, to human health, and to non-target organisms. So we look for strategies or products to develop or to test that are compatible with that approach. And those include biological products, like biological insecticides, that are often formulated from a fungus or a bacteria that only kills the insects and is not harmful to other organisms. And those biological products can be then used very safely against insect pests. So more and more of these types of products are coming into the market and becoming available to homeowners, in part due to the research that some of us do to test those commercial products. But we also have to be good informed consumers and make sure that those products that we're purchasing are indeed registered for the proper use, and they are there's good information behind the effectiveness. Biological products are becoming more widely available, but we have to test them ourselves often, and the situation we have to make our own decisions whether or not they work. But yeah, there's a lot of effort going on in defining solutions that are applicable to homeowner situations, but also to the commercial settings.
Dr. Carlos Bogarón, thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us today.
Oh, you're welcome. Anytime.